basically the United States has turned into an oligarchy, and it's run by, you know, not 9.5 people, because the president still has some influence through executive orders, but for the most part, even Biden can't rule. So it's basically these 9 people with Biden occasionally doing an executive order. And that's not what Madison intended. The Republicans are always like, we need to follow the Constitution. And I'm at the point where I'm like, it's not a great document, but it's a hell of a lot better than the garbage we have now.
Our friend Dr. Roy Casagrande, professor of government at Austin Community College and wise observer of all things political, returns to the Plutopia podcast. We discuss the January 6th hearings, the Supreme Court versus abortion, gerrymandering, angry and frightened voters, dog whistles, and 2024 presidential hopefuls. So did you watch the latest hearing, the emergency hearing?
I watched it, and it was a train wreck.
I haven't laughed that much in a long time, and it's for all the wrong reasons.
All the wrong reasons.
But wait a minute. Now, why do you say it was a train wreck? I thought that train was running right along there. It seemed pretty calm and cool, considering. Oh, yeah. I mean, I can imagine the kinds of tweets she's getting.
I'm just having this image of the president throwing his McDonald's hamburger against the Oval Office wall, ketchup dripping down the side.
You know, it's not really like Donald Trump to waste a perfectly good hamburger.
Yeah.
He must have been very upset.
This is the guy who eats pizza with a knife and fork, so his table managers are questionable to begin with.
I mean, imagine you've riled up a crowd to go do an insurrection to overthrow a democracy, and your own Secret Service won't let you go.
That proves who the brains are being held by. It's not by the president.
So do you think, I mean, this is like going to be very speculative on your part, Roy, but do you think that he actually believes that he won the election?
Yeah, I mean, that is a tough question. I'm not sure. I definitely don't know. 1 minute you listen to him talk and you think, yeah, I think this guy believes. But then the next minute you think, I just think he knows he's lying, and I can't sort the two out. I mean, he'll contradict himself 3 times in the same sentence. Well, let alone in the same speech.
Considering that he did so much setup, I mean, he spent much of the campaign talking about how the election was going to be rigged and the mail-in ballots were going to throw the election to Biden in some way.
Yeah.
And certainly when he lost, he was ready to jump in with that same story. And it just seems very contrived to me. I kind of don't think he actually believes it.
So that's the impulse I have, is that he doesn't believe it when I think about that. But here's the thing. I think at some level he believes he so deserves this, and he's so good at twisting reality to fit. So like if somebody does something wrong, if he does something wrong, he blames somebody else. So that when the hamburger got slammed against the wall, you know he found somebody else to blame. And I think when you're in that mindset, you start to believe your own lies. Even if you know they're lies, you still believe them. And I think he fits that category.
So, political question, why are Republicans standing behind him to the extent that they are? It's looking worse and worse for him.
I mean, it's really baffling, because the same Republican politicians who were very clearly against what Trump did on January 6th and January 7th, and maybe even in January 8th, 9th, are now blindly following along with him. And I think it boils down to 82% of the Republican Party believes that Trump is the guy, and they think that he's the best thing since Kool-Aid, and they're ready to drink the Kool-Aid.
But I don't understand why. I mean,
you don't
they have other people.
You don't understand Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah, I mean, they have other people that they could drop into that slot, other people who could run for president. I'm not sure I understand why they would want him to come back. I mean, his issues are pretty obvious.
I mean, I assume you mean the average voter, the 82%.
Well, I'm also talking about the actual party itself. I mean, the Republican Party apparatus really still seems to be aligned with him in some way. And he seems to have a lot of support within the RNC.
My understanding, and again, this is an outside observer just trying to look in, is that they were ready to throw him under the bus on January 7th. You know, on January 6th, you had Betsy DeVos resigning. You had Chao resigning, right? I mean, Chao, of course, is Mitch McConnell's wife. You had Kevin McCarthy saying that the president really screwed up. You had Sean Hannity saying that, you know, no more talk about botched election. It's time to, you know, talk about peaceful transition of power. His lawyers were done with him. So I think there was, at least at the leadership in the Republican Party, there was an attempt to see if they could jettison this guy. But then they looked at the polls that were coming in and they realized that the average American Republican was ready to run off the cliff with the rest of the lemmings. And I think they thought, we will get trashed in the primaries if we stand up to this guy. Yeah. And my political career is more important than the United States.
Yeah, I get the feeling from just the things I see and hear in the news that a lot of the Republican power brokers don't want to let go of him because he's far more malleable than a Pence or some of the more, or a Cheney, you know, some of the more, you know, sane Republicans, if there is such a thing.
I mean, I think that's true too. Trump appears to be that guy that listens to the last person he talked to. The problem is how do you become the last person to talk to him? And, you know, he surrounded himself by sycophants who lie to him and tell him what he wants to hear. You know, it's like right to the end, Meadows was telling him what he wanted to hear. And, you know, when you're in that kind of bubble, you do really stupid things like attack neighboring countries that you don't have the ability to conquer. And the next thing you know, you look like an idiot. And I think that's really dangerous. And so I don't know why the Republican leadership would want that. I think the Republican leadership would be better off with a Mike Pence or a DeSantis. I think they're trapped.
Well, actually, and my theory was that
they've made a deal with him and that they said, look, keep running for president because you can raise all that money and you just keep the money. But we don't really want you to run for president. We don't mind you using this ruse that you are going to run for president to raise as much money as you can, but we don't want you in there again.
Yeah. I mean, it could be. I just don't see him losing in the primaries. I mean, if that's their strategy going forward, I think they're going to be really shocked. Yeah, you know, sometime around April or May of 2024 when he wins the primaries. I don't even think it'll take that long. I think we'll know that he won the primaries by the end of February.
Do you think that this January 6th committee is going to deliver to the extent that people start asking or questioning whether they really want him, including like rank and file voters?
I mean, that I guess that's the question of questions. From what I'm seeing, no Republican is watching it, not even the politicians. So that rules out the possibility that the Republican Party is going to somehow wake up from this. So I think at that point, then what we're looking at is does this wake up the sleepy Democrats who are really awful at voting and improve voter turnout? I mean, Texas would be a blue state if Democrats would just vote in Texas. Yeah. Voter apathy in Texas is such that the Republicans as a minority party just tyrannize the state. So the question I think is, will the hearings activate the comatose Democrats? And then will it sway independents? The Democrats, I don't think, can be hoping that they're going to have too much traction amongst Republicans, But they are trying, obviously, because, right, they've got Liz Cheney up there, and they've got all the witnesses are Republicans, one after the other after the other. And, you know, they are diehard Republicans. There's no way that you can look at those guys and go, oh, I bet they're going to vote Democrat in the next election. They're probably actually going to vote Trump in the next election. That's the hilarious thing about it all.
Well, I mean, the other question is the Republicans have been doing everything they can to seize control of the voting process. And I'm not clear about to what extent they've been able to do that. I know that in some states they have been successful in doing some of that work. And I just find myself wondering if they're going to be able to, if they can basically fix the next election, if they can gain that much ground.
They've definitely done that with the House of Representatives. The United States is so gerrymandered when it comes to House of Representatives voting. I don't think we can classify the United States as a democracy in any way, shape, or form. The House is a fully rigged institution. The Senate, they can't do that because, right, the Senate seats are at large. The thing is that the Republicans have the small states. So as a result, they're going to get better representation in the Senate. It's the only reason they're competitive in the Senate.
I'm not really just talking about gerrymandering. I'm talking about the fact that they're actually getting their partisans to take control of elections.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
they're running elections.
And we've seen now was it New Mexico? It was New Mexico.
I'm wondering about that. I mean, what is there to prevent them from succeeding?
I think they might pull this off in red counties like Lincoln County, New Mexico, but I can't imagine them pulling this off in a place that's blue. I don't think they have the political traction to get in there and get that many positions. Now, if they did do it, though, it would just show that Democratic apathy has hurt the Democratic Party.
And of course, if they manage to get the election thrown to the Supreme Court, there's a problem there, too, because the Supreme Court seems to be making some very weird decisions right now.
The last 2 weeks have been a nightmare.
We can just not count on the Supreme Court being a savior anymore. That happened with gerrymandering a few times where they actually threw it back saying, that this is ridiculous, go back and redo it. But I don't see that happening.
Well, they're about to take a gerrymandering case where they could just completely screw that up too.
They already have. There was a case in 2018 and they heard the case and then they chose not to rule on it. And it looked like there was going to be a 5-4 decision to make political gerrymandering unconstitutional. And at the last minute, they chose not to rule on it. And as a result, they left it so that political gerrymandering is in place. The only time that I'm aware of that the Supreme Court has knocked down gerrymandering is race-based gerrymandering. So like in LULAC v. Perry, they made Texas redraw a district that had historically been Mexican-American. The Texas legislature had made white. And they made him turn it Mexican-American again. But when it comes to political gerrymandering, the Supreme Court says, no, that's fine, whatever. Of course, if you're in the South, political gerrymandering is racial gerrymandering. So
yeah, I have a long, sad history of that, and especially in Texas. If you look around at some of the weird districts they've drawn, it's like some child just took a crayon and scribbled on a map and said, "All right, that's your district."
I mean, Texas and North Carolina are regularly in front of the Supreme Court for just that reason, because we violate the rules that are in place on such a regular basis. Having said that, the Supreme Court dinged us in time for the 2018 election. I think they dinged us in 2017 over District 35, the way District 35 was drawn. And the Texas legislature said, look, there's only 1.5 years between now and the next election. Obviously, it would take us at least a week to redraw the map. But with 1.5 years, we don't have enough time. So can we not do it in time for the 2018 election? We'll just do it for 2020. And the Supreme Court said, sure, your fellow conservatives, why not? And they never did it. and they left the District 35 messed up. So it's now even at the point where the Supreme Court isn't even enforcing its own rulings. But the new case, I think, that people need to pay attention to is the Alabama case. Alabama should be giving, based on the the Voting Rights Act of 1965, they should be creating two black districts, and they created one black district, which means they've racially gerrymandered the state. The Supreme Court agreed to hear the case. They're going to hear the case in October, which isn't in time for the November election. They could have heard the case in January, but they chose not to, which tells me that they're going to not only let the November election go in missing a black district, but that they're planning to rule to kill the Civil Rights Act. I'm sorry, the Voting Rights Act. So I think next year we're going to see the Voting Rights Act overturned. Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act.
People are really looking at is the Voting Rights Act, and really, you know, Republicans are really praying to get rid of that.
They are. And they've already damaged it. They've already taken out the 4th and 5th sections of the Voting Rights Act, which got rid of federal supervision. So now the last piece basically is Section 2, and I think that goes down next year.
Well, there's this case from North Carolina, too.
I mean, North Carolina and Texas are always in front of the Supreme Court for cheating. And in fact, the 2018 cases that went in front of the Supreme Court, where it was Maryland and Wisconsin, there were two cases, they were merged together. And it really looked like they were going to vote that political gerrymandering was unconstitutional. And it was just a heartbreaking moment. I just don't think they'll do it because it's such a painful defeat for the Republican Party. If they can't gerrymander, they can't win the House. That they lose the House. Up until 1994, the Democrats had owned the House for 40 straight years, uninterrupted 40 straight years. So basically from 54 to 94, that was just a Democratic institution. If you throw in the 20 years before that, so you go back to 34, so FDR's first term, the Republicans had only owned the House for 4 years. So out of a 60-year span of time, the Republicans had the House 4 years. And so the way the Republicans compensated for that was just really crazy gerrymandering since 1994. And as a result, they've actually owned the House the majority of that time period, that 28-year time period.
Well, when we talk about the Supreme Court, the proverbial elephant in the room, Jenny Thomas, is that going to be a problem for Clarence if she gets indicted or at least investigated, called subpoenaed?
So I know we don't do the Constitution anymore. And maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. It's weird not having a governing document. But the Constitution says very clearly that when it comes to the president, it's high crimes and misdemeanor. High crimes and misdemeanors. So it spells out basically criminal activity, treason, sedition. If the president does that, they can be impeached for that. For the Supreme Court, it says good behavior. Now, who defines the word good? I'm not sure, but good doesn't mean not breaking the law. Good is a way different standard than breaking the law. In other words, Ginny Thomas conspiring with Mark Meadows to overthrow our democracy may be a violation of Clarence Thomas's good behavior, or the clause for good behavior in the Constitution. And so as a result, I actually think he should be impeached and removed from office. That'll never happen, but it would be us following the Constitution.
Now, behavior is a abstraction at most, because who's going to define it?
I would think that prohibits any drug use, no pornography. You can't cuss, no lying, and no having your spouse attempt to overthrow our democracy. I think all of that is covered under good behavior.
No meat on Friday.
Yeah.
Don't cross in the middle of the street. I mean,
no spitting. No elbows on tables.
I think, you know, this thing about them trying to overthrow the democracy, I think we feel kind of outraged at that because we're so conditioned to think that democracy is the thing, but they really don't. I mean, they don't want a democracy. They don't care about democracy. They just want, I mean, they want a one-party system, basically.
I think they want a one-party system. They want a theocracy.
And I think part of the problem with the way Democrats have been operating, at least so far, is that they kind of don't really get that completely. It's like Democrats don't really seem to understand that these people want an entirely different country. I mean, they want to completely change the way this country is governed, and they don't give a damn about, you know, all the many years of at least a democratic intention in this country. They don't believe the country should be democratic. They believe that it should be run by a set of people who are, well, you know, obviously there are some people who feel that it should be white Christians running the country. My concern has been that the Democrats are not mounting a very effective challenge to all of this, that they're just sort of like, oh, God, what's going on? You know, not really, not even freaking out about it.
I mean, I think that's true. I think the thing that I keep hearing over and over again is you're exaggerating, you're taking this too far. They don't believe that. There's been a lot of gaslighting over the last 41 years where, you know, you're like, no, these guys clearly have a different agenda. So I was trained as a political philosopher. And, you know, one of the texts we read is John Locke's Second Treatise on Government. And one of the schools of thought in political science it is that John Locke wrote an exoteric text, a text that when you read it and you take it literally, you get one meaning, but that underneath it is an esoteric text. And that is to say, you need to think through what he's saying, because he's made a statement that a surface value might seem intuitive, but when you think about it long enough, you realize it's riddled with contradictions. And then if you explore those contradictions, you discover he had a hidden meaning. And if you do that, if you follow that line of logic, Locke actually seems shockingly similar to Hobbes. The two guys are different on the surface, but at the end of the day, they may be the same. One of the things that I've noticed is a Republican will put out a tweet, like let's say John Cornyn. And, you know, there's a group of us on the left who will interpret the tweet one way. And then there's a group of people who will say, no, you're misinterpreting it. It literally doesn't say that. It says something else. And I think what we've got is we've got this naive approach of I'm going to take a mathematical equation to what politicians are saying and believe everything that they say, and also assume that they're too dumb to have double meanings, and I'm going to fight the exoteric text and I'm going to ignore the esoteric text. And I think we're in big trouble when we do that, because these guys are lawyers. They're skilled exactly at lying and twisting the truth, and you know they. We have this assumption that the right is dumb. If they're dumb, how come they've owned the country for 41 years and mopped the floor with us for 41 years? They just got rid of everything we believe in: separation of church and state, women are human beings, we should have gun control, we should have an EPA that regulates our global warming, like everything. They're destroying everything. If they're dummies, we're morons. And so we need to stop worrying about that.
So what you're saying is don't take your calculus to a basic math discussion with these guys.
Yeah, it's time for us to be as angry as they are and to be as dedicated as they are. I don't think we should fight dirty. I think we should stay above board, although we do, right? I told you about the Maryland-Wisconsin cases. The Maryland case was where the Democrats gerrymandered out a Republican district. But at the end of the day, we really suck at cheating. So maybe that shouldn't be our approach. Maybe what we should be doing is just fighting harder and louder and not assuming that our enemies are idiots and that we're going to somehow win by staying at home and watching reruns of Gilligan's Island.
Well, I'm thinking the Christian conservative power may have decreased slightly following the Southern Baptist Convention's recent changes. you know, admitting to the fact that they had badly handled sexual abuse by their ministers and their church members, and that some of the people that were, you know, the engineers of the Republican takeover of the Southern Baptist Church are now out of power. I don't know how much that will change them, but that was significant. I grew up in the Southern Baptist Church, and I watched my mother, who was a devout Southern Baptist, tormented because suddenly she wasn't allowed to teach certain things like racial equality. So that was a no-no. And that was, you know, the time that the Republicans got really, you know, their feet on the gas pedal of the Southern Baptist Church, and they haven't stopped until just recently.
You could be right. I tend to be skeptical. So my assumption is that people will say, yeah, I'm really disgusted and I can't believe this happened. But then on November, the first Tuesday in November, unless it falls on November 1st, then it's the second Tuesday. Who came up with that rule? Anyway, what will happen is they'll hold their nose and they'll walk in there and they're going to cast a vote for Donald Trump. Because at the end of the day, they hate the other side so much that they would rather have the worst imaginable child molesting president who raped 15-year-old girls. Like, they don't even care. One of the things that drives them is their hatred of things like abortion. But here's the twist. I think overturning Roe may have done more damage to them than Baptist ministers molesting children, because now what do they have to rally their voters around? If Roe's gone, like, why are there one-issue voters going to the voting booth? They might as well stay home and watch reruns of Gilligan's Island.
Yeah, well, Clarence Thomas.
And on the other hand, the Democrats are, like, super pissed off about it and starting to think maybe this idea of voting is a serious thing that we should think about.
Yeah.
Yeah, Clarence Thomas pointed to where the direction may head, and that's taking that same so-called logic behind the most recent, behind the Roe decision, and applying it to other things that they don't particularly like, gay marriage.
Lawrence Griswold and
interracial marriage, which will be a toughie for old Clarence, but, you know.
He didn't bring that up. He did not bring up loving.
Yeah, I wonder why.
I wonder why. I was like, where's loving? You're going to do Griswold. You're going to do Lawrence and Obergefell. You got to do loving. Don't be a hypocrite.
Cheery well.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God is right. I just can't even believe it. I mean, Griswold was 1965. It says that married couple can get birth control. Like, you, why do you want that overturned?
Well, if you're a gynecologist, perhaps, or an obstetrician, more customers.
Making America 19th century again.
Yes,
that's the goal.
But, you know, as I hinted at in our introduction, you know, Texas really wants to, you know, have people birthing those babies. But somehow they don't qualify for Medicaid or medical assistance of any sort. We're not going to give them any good food for their school lunches. We're not going to give them money for their for their parents who have to stay home rather than work. They want to have the babies. They just don't want to take care of them.
They're not going to control guns so there aren't school shootings. And then when there are school shootings, they're going to have the cops stand outside so they can be set.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers. I mean,
but, you know, one of the thoughts I've had is, I mean, there's an awful lot of gay people in this country, and there's an awful lot of women in this country, and I can't believe that that's not like a massive potential voter turnout.
I mean, I think it could be. One of the things I'm always accused of is I always see the dark side of things, and I never see the positive. It is possible that what just happened will activate liberals and socialists and people who lean left who are independent, and they are going to show up and they're going to vote. But because I always do see the dark side of this, it's worth pointing out a huge cadre of the Republican Party, a huge cadre of people who identify as conservative, when they're polled, on the specific issues. So where do you stand on gun control? Where do you stand on gay rights? Where do you stand on abortion? Where do you stand on whether or not you should have tattoo parlors? You know, right? You go down the list. Should we do mass transit? They're actually moderate liberals. There's a whole segment of the US population that are moderate liberals who religiously vote Republican, and they will tell you point blank, I'm a conservative, and they voted for Trump. And, you know, like, how do you get that guy to recognize that if you gave them a list of 12 issues, on 10 of them, they're a liberal, and on two of them, they're conservative? That doesn't make them a conservative.
Well, I think some of those people voted for Biden, you know.
Some of those people voted for Obama. I mean, right? Yeah. That's the great irony of this.
What's weird is a lot of black and brown people voted for him, too.
In, especially in 2020, right? In 2016, yeah. It was a pretty typical election. But in 2020, we saw Asian Americans and Mexican Americans show up in larger numbers than is usual for a Republican. So, you know, like Mexican Americans, instead of 67% vote for the Democrat, it was 60%. It wasn't that it had flipped the party, or the Mexican-American population had flipped. It's just there was an erosion in support. Having said that, Biden got record-breaking turnout from every sector, right? White record-breaking turnout, black record-breaking turnout, Mexican record-breaking turnout, Asian record. And that's why he won in such a big way in 2020.
The Hispanics in far south Texas have moved way to the right now. That's so just weird to me.
Yeah, I mean,
strange.
It's actually relatively a small population, and it's a population that generally doesn't vote. But when you think about it, it makes sense. That population of people are against minimum wage. They're against gay marriage. They're against abortion. Like, when you go down the list, that guy is a conservative. The thing they don't like is how racist and anti-immigrant the Republican Party is. So they're only loyal to the Democratic Party because they're looking at the Democratic Party going, well, at least they don't spit in my face and they buy my tacos. And so, yeah, I don't think anybody should be surprised that we lose that vote when they get enthusiastic.
And that reminds me, that makes me think about the fact that kind of the reason we are where we are is because the Republicans have used these weird cultural issues to get people to the polls who before didn't vote. And also those people who stayed quiet about things before are now starting to be very vocal about them.
Yeah,
and Trump has given people permission to be just out and out crazy.
Yeah,
you know? I'm not racist.
I did a good job of tricking people into thinking that they had a big, undercurrent of support from black people. Because you'd see the people with the Blacks for Trump T-shirts on.
Yeah.
And you know,
and that one guy that he would always have in the back behind him in the rallies.
Yeah, and you know the reporters were tracking these guys down, and sure they said, yeah, they paid us to be here.
It's like, yeah,
okay, but that's also an old Democrat trick too, because both parties have done some sketchy tactics to make them appear to be supported by whoever.
Yeah, the Russians do that today, right? I mean, that's just you pay people to show up for a protest. I'm still waiting for my checks for all the protests I've been to. It's been a lot, guys. You owe me a lot of back pay. I've even been arrested twice. Do I get a bonus for that?
Absolutely.
When is it coming? Where's my check?
It's lost in the mail. Ask Louis DeJoy where your check is.
Oh, yeah. He's the best.
There is no DeJoy in Mudville. Mighty.
Well, I'm starting to think that politics in general is just slime, and I have a real distaste for it. And I almost convinced myself that I don't want to even think about it, that I just want to hide from it.
Okay, so, John, that's wrong. We're going to delete that.
I know.
No, it's wrong. Here's why. It turns out disgusted voters don't vote. The people who vote are angry or scared voters. So somehow we're going to have to make you angry and frightened.
But what if I'm angry, scared, and disgusted?
As long as you're so angry and scared, it overwhelms your disgust.
Yeah, then good.
Just show up at the polls, you know. I'm wearing my disgust. I don't know if you can see my T-shirt I brought.
Oh, wow.
Here. My good friend, a great activist, artist, and sub-genius in San Francisco, Paul Mavridis, made these, and he convinced me to give him. I yelled out, take my money. I want it. And he's still selling these, but it kind of sums it up.
You need to put a link somewhere so we can get one of those.
Oh, I certainly will.
I have one that's, what does it say? It says, unapologetically pro-democracy. It's one of those Touch T-shirts. Yeah.
Yeah, it's sad that we're on a stage where that's a thing now.
I'm really finding it hard to get my T-shirt to sway any voters.
T-shirt politics worked for Trump. I mean, those damn T-shirts and hats were everywhere.
They were.
Yeah, why is it that Democrats are so bad at branding?
So I think part of it is that, what is the saying? It's probably a terrible saying, but Democrats have to fall in love and Republicans fall in line. That there's kind of a different dynamic in how we approach our leaders. And so, you know, I think leftists are skeptical. They every leftist thinks they have the right answer and they're willing to trash another leftist set because they weren't exactly doing the same thing.
Great point.
And I think Republicans, there's a set of beliefs and they just sort of buy into it. And if they're confused what the beliefs are, they listen to Hannity and he straightens them out for them. You get 12 Democrats in the same room and you're going to have a 12-way argument.
I thought it was kind of weird, and I thought it was really stupid that the Republicans didn't have a platform in 2016, and I guess not, or in 2020, I guess it is. But then I saw, now they have a platform that Scott, you know, created, and I'd much rather they didn't have a platform.
Well, how about that Texas platform? You talk about...
Oh, my God.
I mean, they took every dog whistle and amplified it and put it in writing.
Is it a dog whistle if everybody can hear it?
What's really interesting is that they've started calling people on the left fascists.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is an odd thing to do, but I guess it makes sense, really. I mean, they do a really good job of taking pot shots at owning the libs or whatever. And that other thing, the thing that I've been sort of upset about is their alteration of the meaning of the word woke. So that woke, which was, you know, sort of I think it became really popular in Black Lives Matter to use the term woke for people who are awake to or aware of social inequality and social justice issues and so forth and racial issues. Now what it means is people who are being excessively politically correct or pissy and getting other people canceled and fired. And, you know, the way that they use it, they suggest that this is something that the left does. And the fact that they're pulling books out of libraries, that's not cancellation.
Right.
Yeah, about that critical race theory, that was another one that they built its head and used as an insult. Or
attacking crime. Big Bird. They canceled Big Bird.
And the idea that critical race theory is being taught in elementary schools is absurd.
I mean, it is a field of philosophy that's taught in some college courses. So to imagine a fifth grader trying to grapple with those theories is a little hard to imagine. Yeah.
So how are we going to fix it? How do we fix everything?
Anger and fear. We need to make everybody angry and scared. That's what, as a political scientist, that is my professional opinion for how you get people to the polls.
And I think there's people who weren't feeling that scared in April who now in June with July approaching are feeling pretty scared.
We have data to confirm that. I think the poll was done in May. So I'd have to double check, but right, 70% of Americans supported Roe in some way, shape, or form. So there was a population of that 70% who didn't think 24 weeks made sense. Maybe they wanted 15 weeks, or maybe they only wanted it in cases of rape and incest. Only 30% of Americans wanted Roe overturned. Of the 70%, 50%, as late as May of this year, did not believe Roe was in danger. So 35% of the US supported Roe, but didn't think it was in danger in May. And that makes you just wonder, how big is that cave exactly that it can fit 110 million people? Like, oh, this is a big cave. I want a seat.
Well, I actually didn't believe that Roe was in danger.
Yeah. You didn't?
On the other hand, they have,
I didn't think they would do it.
15 months ago, Roe dies this year. I even said June.
I didn't think they would do it.
Yeah, they have.
I totally thought they were going to do it.
They have this poll out, though, that says 70% don't like the way Biden's handling things. So, you know, we've got polls going all over the place.
But Biden's doing a pretty great job, you know, and I don't know how to make that argument, especially with those people. There's no point.
I mean, I think Biden's big problem is the fact that he can't get anything passed in Congress. So he's basically ruling by executive order, which is, by the way, what Obama had to do in his last 6 years in office as well. And so there's a systematic problem, and that is that our Constitution has failed. Our Congress no longer functions, and our Supreme Court has usurped too much authority. And what Madison intended is not what we have. And by the way, Madison also wrote the Second Amendment. He did not mean for it to mean what people think it means. And if you read it, it doesn't mean what people think it means. And so we're in trouble because our institutions are starting to no longer function. And when an empire gets to that point, eventually, right, it crumbles, it fails. Yeah. And I think Biden in those circumstances is actually a good president. It's just because he can't get anything done, he can't do things like fight inflation and fix our infrastructure.
Well, I mean, what could he do about inflation anyway? That's sort of beyond the president's reach. It's not something he caused, and it's not something he can necessarily fix. It's a complex problem. I
mean, if he had a Congress that functioned, they could pass bills. They could approach. They could make an attempt to fix things.
Nixon did wage and price freezes, I recall.
That didn't work.
And I haven't heard any mention of anything like that. It didn't work, but I thought it was kind of performative. I mean, it was just a matter of looking like you're doing something, right?
Right. I mean, but that's huge for a president. Look, if you look at what FDR did in his 12 years, most of his policies fell flat on their face. But the American public was madly in love with them because they saw this guy fighting really hard for them. And so even though he didn't get us out of the Great Depression, he just sort of put our arm in a splint and gave us aspirin. We appreciated the effort. And I think we see a government that doesn't do that anymore, a government that doesn't function.
The other thing about Roosevelt is that he was charismatic, and Biden just really doesn't have that kind of charisma.
That's absolutely true, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, we've had plenty of charismatic presidents, and many of them just were awful. They sucked, and it wasn't great.
Who would you like to see run for president? There's a question about whether Biden should or could run again. If he didn't run again, who could be most effective as a candidate in this next election?
I think that's another problem the Democratic Party has is who is next? Nobody's even talking about who is next. If Trump runs in 2024, could you run somebody like Kamala Harris? That's a big question mark for me. I'm not sure. I think whomever we want to run or whomever we want to end up with, we need a skilled, experienced politician, somebody who's been in the trenches for decades. No more of these outsider politicians. They have not worked. We've done them for decades now, and they're awful. And that's one of the things that I think Biden brings to the White House right now is he brings something we haven't had in decades, which is experience. Right?
Yeah.
Every time Trump would go 47 years, I'm like, yeah, 47 years of knowledge and experience. That's amazing. Or as opposed to Trump, who had literally zero because he had never been elected to anything.
Yeah, but on the other hand,
there would be a really bad thing for Trump, I mean for Biden, not to run, because it would throw the Democratic Party into such turmoil that I don't think anyone would be able to settle upon another candidate in time for them to run a good campaign.
I think that's true. Yeah, I think maybe our best bet is that he runs again in 2024 and, you know, gets that next term. And in the meantime, the Democrats come up with a new candidate and push them forward.
I think he's too fucking old, man.
He's too old. He's.
And it really doesn't make sense for him to run again. And I thought he had said he would only be a one-term president, but apparently that's not what he actually said.
But I think he made it very clear, at least with the way he would talk, that he doesn't want to do two terms. I think he's tired.
I'm amazed at how well he's holding up, actually. And, you know, people try to say he has dementia or something, but he's actually been pretty amazing as a public speaker, given his speech defect.
Exactly. Yeah. And also his age and his exhaustion.
Yeah, yeah.
I think of all the times I misspeak when I'm in front of a classroom or in a format like this. And I'm not going to judge a guy who, when he talks about the 60s, means the 1860s.
So I've wondered, the problem that I see is I can't, if I start thinking really hard about it, I can't think of anybody in the Democratic Party who I think would be sort of an ideal kick-ass candidate. Sometimes, you know, people will say Pete Buttigieg, but, you know, I think he's got some negatives and he's still pretty young. Amy Klobuchar would probably be great, but
she's too far to the right.
Is she?
I think so, yeah. And Buttigieg is just too young. He doesn't have experience. I don't care how many small towns he becomes mayor of. I'm done with these outsiders who don't know what the White House looks like.
There's Bernie, but he's also too old, I think.
Bernie's just too old. And he's also, to be clear, too Jewish and too atheist.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we are still a deeply anti-Semitic society, and we're a bunch of religious fanatics on the verge of creating Gilead. And here's this guy who's a socialist atheist Jew.
Yeah, that's
it's my dream, but it's everybody else's nightmare.
Yeah, he's the hat trick for things you don't want to tell the people who are wavering. But yeah, I think the Democrats aren't going to come up with a viable candidate until all us old white guys are gone. I mean, we're dead. And I see these younger people that are politically active, and they have a lot of good ideas and a lot of energy that is non-existent in the upper reaches of the Democratic Party, the old guy reaches.
Yeah, and I think part of that, too, is just how locked into corporate interests the Democratic Party really is. I invented Gilead. Yeah,
you mentioned Gilead, and I was remembering that I had just seen this. Margaret Atwood is kind of freaked out that she was prophetic.
I mean, it's terrible. I believe that when the Republicans are watching The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, they're thinking, yes, that's what we want. And so we're watching it weeping and tearing our hair out. And they see it differently.
Oh. Now I'm starting to get depressed.
Oh, sorry.
Not your fault.
Well, locally, what looks good to you, Roy? There are some really good races, in the county and city and in the state that may change things a little bit. What do you see as a hopeful race?
I'm not sure I have exactly a hopeful race. I think that between Robb Elementary and Roe getting overturned, we're going to at least see the Democrats lose by a smaller margin. But it's entirely possible that a bunch of Republicans will stay home because they'll say, yeah, we got abortion. We got rid of abortion. That was what I was aiming for. I'm good. I don't need anything else. I'll just wait till 2024 to vote for Trump. If that does happen, if there is voter apathy on the Republican side, then I think a bunch of races end up in the running, right? Like, I wouldn't be completely surprised if Beto wins.
I wondered about that. Abbott definitely has a lot of negatives, and Beto seems to be doing a pretty good job of leveraging those things.
I think he's behind by 2 percentage points right now. 2 percentage points, that's doable. That's entirely plausible.
Yeah, Abbott hasn't come up with a good point lately. It's always just your thoughts and prayers, and it's Biden's fault at the border, and that's pretty much it. He's got his litany down to just a few points and nothing new.
And poor Abbott, he doesn't know the difference between the word open and closed. He's like, this is Biden's open border policy. If it was open, nobody would be being smuggled in. They would just walk in because it was open.
Yeah.
It's because of Biden's closed border policy that Abbott wants. I mean, the poor guy. And then I'm trying to figure out why it's not a scandal every time a utility company tells us we're probably going to run out of energy. Please move your thermostat to 90 degrees.
But they fixed the grid.
They fixed the grid, which is why we keep getting these warnings that the grid's going to malfunction.
Are you telling me that Abbott lied about the grid?
And then I'm trying to figure out why Abbott lying about everything that happened at Robb Elementary hasn't completely blown up in his face. Like, for example, he lied about the fact that there was DPS there right from the beginning. So technically at that moment, it became the governor's operation because DPS is Texas. It's not Uvalde. And then he lied about that they didn't have assault rifles, that they didn't have armor. They had armor. And the way we know is there's cameras in the school, and the news agencies have gotten a hold of the cameras, and they have now timestamps at the moment when an assault rifle was in there and a moment a person with body armor was in there. And it looks like the governor and the state, the DPS, botched this operation from the beginning. And I don't get how these aren't scandals.
Well, I think that maybe they are scandals. I mean, what would you see that would convince you that people are upset about it? You know,
I mean, people are clearly upset about it. I'm seeing it on social media. I'm seeing it when I talk to people. In my classroom this summer session, my students are all shook up and they're really upset about it. I haven't seen the kind of public outrage that I think is necessary to hold the government accountable. If this was a European country, the governor would have resigned.
Republicans probably don't even know that he lied about it.
Yeah, you're not.
I mean, yeah, for sure. Because they're living
Fox isn't carrying this stuff. You don't see it in conservative media. Everything's hunky-dory, fine, and nobody's lying.
And all you need to do to see the timeline is go look at news agencies like The Guardian or BBC, because they actually have the timeline, and it shows step by step how the three police departments that were involved completely botched everything.
And you have to look outside the U.S. to see that.
You have to look outside the U.S. to get the news.
That's my usual news gathering process, is I go outside the United States to foreign media who actually have a really good beat on what's going on here.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know quite how to parse it all. I really didn't expect it to get this far. And I'm still a little surprised. I mean, apparently it is mostly attributable to Fox News and to the fact that Fox News is really definitely getting into people's heads. But it just kind of amazes me.
I also blame Reagan.
Ronald
Reagan, yeah. I think what Reagan did in the 80s has triggered everything that led to this moment, including our really dumb reaction to 9/11, which I think made people go insane. I think 9/11 also has affected us. I think we've lost our minds, our collective sanity. And what we needed at that moment was a president that was going to help us heal emotionally, not just randomly attack two completely uninvolved Muslim countries.
Right.
And so I think part of our insanity is this combination of Reagan's madness plus Bush plus Osama bin Laden. And I really wish we hadn't gone down that path.
Yeah, the way that 9/11 was handled ended up with it being a war cry. It's like every time you said something bad about the Republican Party or George Bush, everyone just go, but 9/11, which was an early version of, but the emails.
Yeah, and we so desperately wanted somebody to die, we just randomly picked two countries and attacked it. There's nobody to kill. The 19 guys we wanted to kill were dead.
Well, was that really random, though? I mean, I think that they were itching to go after Saddam.
Yes. Yeah. So in that case, it wasn't random in the sense that the Republicans desperately wanted to attack, an excuse to attack Iraq. But the irony is Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein were bitter enemies, and Osama had a hit.
You know, the guy I like to watch on that, William Crystal, you know William Crystal? Yeah, and he was like gung-ho about going into Iraq at the time and all that. And he is one guy who really realizes and acknowledges that that was failed and that he was completely wrong and that he was kind of humbled by the whole thing.
Yeah, that's a rarity hearing someone like him saying that.
I mean, it's really incredible. And then, of course, now we have George Bush Jr. admitting it, right? When he was talking about Ukraine, he said, you know, to have this authoritarian guy force a country to attack another country, you know, when we invaded Iraq, that was a crime. Oh, I meant Ukraine. And then he says, and this is the important thing, well, Iraq also. And then he giggles and he says, anyway, I'm 78. And he moves on. And so he admitted that he was wrong for doing it.
Yeah, unfortunately, all the Republicans, you know, think of him as some sort of loser because he lost some of his evil ways, I guess. He's just not evil enough to be a Republican.
I mean, of course, one of those Republicans thinks that the dead at World War I and World War II were losers too, and so I don't listen to them anymore.
Thankfully.
Yeah, they're all reptiles anyway.
Well, we're coming up to the final minute of this ball game. You going to swing for the fences, Roy, and give us some parting wisdom?
After today's Supreme Court ruling on the EPA, I just don't know what else the Supreme Court has left to do this session. But look for the Voting Rights Act to go down in a ball of flames next year. And I'm thinking they're going to target either Obergefell's or Lawrence or something. This is a process. They're looking long term. They want to get rid of everything, including Brown versus Board of Education. John Cornyn did a dog whistle on that in a tweet recently. So, you know what I mean? Like, they're signaling to the base their long term project is to make America 19th century again. And so it's time to be angry and scared.
Well, thanks so much, Roy, for joining us tonight on that cheery note.
We count on you for a good view of what's happening, and we hope you'll continue to join us.
Thanks for having me.
You can follow the Plutopia News Network at plutopia.io. On Facebook, go to @PlutopiaNews. On Twitter, it's @Plutopia. With John Lepkoski, I'm Scoop Sweeney. This is the Plutopia News Network, 20 minutes into the future.